Hello, welcome to the Angry Dorks podcast. Right now, it's me and Ed Greer.
Yay, Ed Greer.
All right, good times.
Well, Matt Blackwood. What happened to Matt?
Oh, Matt is sitting out because we were having a comics and comics invasion today. We're supposed to have Joe Starr, Tom Frank, and Asterios come here. Right now, it's Ron Swallow and Ed Greer.
Oh, well, you know, they're probably on their way. They'll be here sometime during today.
Fair enough.
So, we'll have to be entertaining enough for four people.
Yeah.
I think we can do it.
I think we can do it.
All right.
Have you seen the new Superman? Well, when I say new, everybody else seems to think it's new, but the Superman trailer?
You know what? I kind of don't like to watch trailers as much as everybody else because it either gets me too hype about the shit or it doesn't show me exactly what I want to see so that I'll get down on it or whatever. Like I really didn't even watch Prometheus trailers. I didn't. I just sort of wanted to let it wash over me.
Okay, then here's another question. I've recently had people tell me like, "Oh, just lower your expectations and everything will be better."
I never fall for that.
That's kind of bullshit, right?
Yeah, that's extra
bullshit.
Somebody
told me about that Green Lantern when I looked at the trailer and I was like, "Oh, this is..."
Well, dude, I mean, I saw my friend downloaded it, and there was a scene where a helicopter is about to crash on Green Lantern's girlfriend. So instead of making a big pillow or something or a pterodactyl to take the freaking, you know, chopper out of the sky, he makes a PT cruiser out of green energy. The freaking thing falls on it. The chopper falls on it, and it drives the helicopter around a track.
Oh, yeah, I kind of remember that.
And slows it down. And I'm like, dude, this is the most convoluted Rube Goldberg-ass bullshit I've ever seen to stop a chopper.
It's also the thing that Kyle Rayner would do, not Hal Jordan. I mean, argument-wise. Because Kyle's the artist, so he does all the weird shit.
Right, and it would be really cool if he definitely did something, I don't know, something more imaginative. I said it on stage before, Green Lantern really missed me because he can envision anything, and he makes boxing gloves and big hands. I would make chainsaw bees that shit lava snakes into your fucking eyes.
Yeah, me
too. You know what I mean? That would be instantly what I would do.
I would also make green big titty bitches that I just made sweet, sweet love to.
But how much friction can your dick get on a hard light construct?
That's a good question. I don't know. I guess if your imagination is strong enough, it's pretty much as tight as you want.
Well, yeah. Who wants a tight, light vagina?
Well, if you did make big, titted, green bitches, Disney would sue.
Oh, good point. Good point. No, that's DC. We're cool.
No, DC would sue over She-Hulk.
Oh, good point. They might.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Over She-Hulk.
That's Tom Frank.
Tom Frank and Joe Starr have showed up.
Tom Frank with green titty facts.
Jump right into the titties.
That's the best way to jump in, anyways.
Hold on, let me start rolling.
We're filming stuff today because people are actually interested in us doing things together on a TV show, possibly. So, I was a little nervous because for the moment, I was by myself at about 5:59. Oh, 5:59, 47 seconds.
Here, and they're like, Yota, I'm a soldier.
Like, yes.
And no one was here with
I'm
you.
Like, oh, fuck. For a minute, I was like, oh, things are going to go wrong, and I'm going to have to spend an hour just talking and see what happens.
Hey, that was the first time I used the cough button. I've been a little bit under the weather, and I just had to cough, and I used the cough button.
That's, you know what,
man?
That's the love of having a live cast downtown L.A. at 6 o'clock p.m. It's the magic hour for things getting started on time.
Yeah, no, this is pretty much the worst time to do anything in L.A.
Plus a very... angry.
How did the scheduling come about for this?
The guy who's in charge told me this is when we're doing it. And I said,
fair enough.
Okay. And also, the one thing that's great about it is from 6 to 7, people are probably in their cars, and you can listen to this podcast in your car if you have the right equipment.
Yeah, dorks have drive time, too.
Yeah.
And they don't have anything to listen to. It's like, hey, it's the fart monger and the douchebag. What the fuck is going on? We got a bitch in a suit of armor about to dip for some donuts. Like, what
would be the best time slot? Like, if we rise up in the ratings?
I mean, I don't know.
Happy Days time?
What's the best time slot, Nick?
What would be the best time slot for this show?
For any show.
The show that's doing well, like Cartoon Network, if you're on Friday, like at 8 p.m.
That's the good.
Yeah, that's the sweet spot. for podcasts, for live.
Think quicker, Nick. Reporting. We're having dead time here.
That all really depends.
I don't like that answer.
Radio, it would be like the morning.
Yeah, I guess it would be the morning, right?
Yeah.
Because people are driving and they're stuck in traffic for a large amount of time.
Because you're competing with the Beaver and the Farfanuger.
Yeah, morning is a good time. Morning's a good spot.
Time for some 8 a.m. prank calls.
And then they'll do this. Hold on. Let's see. Let's try this one.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
They'll do things like that. They'll just put in a random.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
For no reason. Well, I mean, yeah, it is a good movie.
Yeah, but it would never be from a good movie. It'd be from, like, Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
Okay, so what are we talking about today, Ron?
Okay, well, first thing we were going to talk about is how awesome it is to do comedy in front of nerds.
Oh, yeah.
Today's December 10th, is that right?
Yeah.
We're going to call this the unofficial 5-year anniversary of Comics and Comics.
Okay.
Which is the 15th.
Yeah, we've had Comics and Comics. For those of you that don't know, Comics and Comics is a group of hilarious comedians who have a fanboy bent. You can, Tom Frank is the founder. Tell us how you came up with the idea, Tom.
I was doing a horrible show somewhere on Sunset Boulevard, and I stopped by afterwards to Meltdown and told the owner there, and then he emailed me on Monday saying, hey, I want to do comedy here. So worked on developing it there, put on the first show. Ed Greer appeared on that show.
Nice.
Yay.
And I remember we were talking about it. I said, oh, yeah, Meltdown, they want to do the show. And you were like, really? And you were like skeptical because we didn't know each other that well back then. And you didn't know if I was just some fast talker.
He was giving you that black guy skepticism.
Well, that's the one thing. When Tom Frank comes up to you all muscly and vision questy and shit, and he says that he's going to do something, and you don't know him, you're just like, I don't know. But he definitely proved himself to be a very great producer and a wonderful comedian. So it's been a love affair ever since.
Hell yes.
Yeah, there's too many people, say that they're going to do stuff and then they never do it.
Yeah, like Ed Greer.
Yeah.
He doesn't do what he says he's going
to
do.
You need to get your headshots done, Ed.
I know, man.
Look, if those of you who are listening, Ed Greer is literally one of the funniest people I know, one of the best comics I've seen in LA or anywhere. And I'm including like people who are famous and shit that I've seen.
Let's talk about different gigs that we've done, you know, with Comics and Comics.
Are you interrupting me?
Geek stuff. Yeah, I am. It wasn't that good.
You don't interrupt me. I was going to say, Ed needs to get his headshots done so he's famous. So anybody out there, make him famous. All right, let's do that. Now, next.
Okay. Operation.
Well, we're talking about how funny Ed Greer is. Asterios is on the phone. Should we take him on the line? Okay.
Well, I don't know if you can do that, but.
Can we hear? Hey, Asterios? Asterios Kokonos is.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
Where is he? Is he lost?
You call us in, right? What's the number?
The building has a scaffolding in front of it. It's 643.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the 8th floor.
It's 810.
Is it on the block that has a 7-Eleven or no?
Yes, it's on
It's
Olive.
Past that block, though.
It's past that block
on Olive.
Depending
it's
on where it's walking.
Scaffolding and shit.
There's a big scaffolding. It looks like a bank that you would rob. And there's a parking lot right next to it.
I'll go stand out front and wait for him so you guys don't use airtime talking to him about it.
That'd be great.
It.
Thank you.
It is a dark building.
This is the most awkward podcast.
There's a scaffolding in front of it. There's work going on, is what it would look like.
Well, no, this is just the sort of behind the scenes stuff that our fans are.
There's a security guard in
totally.
There.
I'm sure they're interested
floor.
In this.
Look at Mandy's going. Well, Mandy's not going to listen because Blackwood's not on here.
Yeah, now Mandy's pissed at us, probably.
He's downstairs.
Cool.
So we were talking about different gigs and how hilarious Ed Greer is. Joe Starr, who just left to go get Asterios, had us do a pretty damn tough gig at UCLA. We were performing at that coffee house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, geez Louise.
Yes. And it was like one of those.
I've done that one before at UCLA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone's studying, you know, and they have their notebook computers open.
It's what I like to call surprise comedy.
Yeah. And it's one of those gigs where you walk in and you're like, okay, I know this is going to be awful.
Yeah.
It is what it is. No big deal. You've been doing this long enough. You can deal with it. You can handle it. And Ed just goes up there and totally destroyed.
Yep.
And got the crowd on his side. Everyone has their good shows and their bad shows, but I was really impressed with how you won them over. It was not easy. Working hard.
One of the ways that as a comedian, you start to realize that you're good is when you do really well in situations that suck dick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, that's how you start to go. That's when you start to really have confidence in being good, just because you're like, Ty Rivera is a perfect example. He's a guy who, when he goes up, doesn't matter how rough the room is, for some reason, he'll just get laughs. And Ed does the same thing. I'm starting to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And I've seen you do the same thing. So, I mean, that's one of the best things about, like, when you start getting good, you can really start making people laugh. But it's even better when you're put in a situation where people are there not only for comedy, but for the style of comedy that you really like to do.
Yeah, and everyone has their good nights, and and it's not necessarily that they're on or off. It's just the way that the cards fall. Hey, Asterios Kokkinos is here.
Did you see Joe?
No.
Joe went to go get you.
Are we live?
Yeah, we're on the air.
Oh, I'm glad we're dealing with this business now. Hey, but speaking of always being on, hey there, guys. What's up?
Asterios Kokkinos has arrived. Say hello, Asterios.
Hey, everybody. How you guys doing?
Asterios will be our voice monkey guy when we go drive time.
Sure.
We'll toss you all the different voices.
Give me anybody right now. Anybody at all. Celebrity.
A rich guy with a monocle.
If you don't mind. My monocle fell out when I heard how poor you were, Mr. Greer.
Okay, here's one.
Luckily, it regenerates like the T-1000.
See? Nerd monocle guy.
Okay, I got a tough one. Do an impression of Asterios Kokkinos on time.
We need a time machine for that.
Hey guys, Hitler won World War II. And Lincoln was never shot.
Awesome.
We were talking about different gigs and like how some people have great shows out of nowhere. Here's an example with Ron Swallow. You were not happy driving back from Hypno Comics in the show that we did in September.
Yeah.
And you totally went, we did that like the night before Kamikaze. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you did Kamikaze and you made all these adjustments and just rocked it at the Kamikaze show.
Yeah, that was fun. That was, well, and I guess that's kind of what
we're... Are we here to talk about all your failures?
And everybody's...
I brought a list.
There's a lot. We only have an hour, man.
It's a digital file, so it expands infinitely.
Yeah, okay.
I'm almost out of a room on my hard drive because of this list.
Is it a terabyte or is it 2 terabytes?
It's an 8 terabyte card, but 6 of them are your failures, so...
well, good.
Does Back to the Future seem old-fashioned now that they're saying gigawatts? That's nothing. Should be terawatts.
I'm reading Tech War right now.
Oh, William Shatner's sci-fi series.
Yeah, William Shatner and then some other guy that did all the writing. And it seems so old-fashioned because all they did was they took 90s technology and shortened it slightly. So they'd be like, put that in the VizCad machine. And it's like, you mean video cassette? They're like, oh, no, VizCas. It's a whole different thing.
The overhead-loading VizCas machine.
Exactly. Adjust the truking.
Put it in the Alpha Max machine.
Man, can you believe there was a time when we only had Betamax? What an old-fashioned world that was.
It's so funny. In RoboCop, there's the scene where Ferrer is fooling around with like two models, and then Wally Cox character comes in with his messenger to kill him, and he like sets a bomb off, and it's the famous line, "Bitches leave."
Yeah.
You know, that scene, and he comes in and he's got like a DVD that he puts in, and then that plays the message from, is it Ronnie Cox is the character?
Ronnie Cox.
Yeah, who's in Vision Quest. He was playing the dad in Vision Quest.
All I know is Ronnie Cox is very similar to Ronnie Swallow.
But he puts in this DVD, and at the time, it just seemed so forward-thinking. He's not using a video cassette to play his message. And it seemed, through the 90s and through, like, the early 2000s, it still seemed like it hadn't aged. But, like, in the last 5 years, it seems totally dated now.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. That kind of thing happens with whenever I watch Star Trek and they look at everything on these little digital pads.
Yeah.
But as my friend Marley pointed out once, they have like 50 of them on their desk. Yeah. It's like, where's that one that I, and it's like, well, obviously.
Why don't you get all your damn information?
Can someone text
yes,
exactly.
Joe to tell him to come back?
Oh, Joe's calling me.
This is working out great,
this is
guys.
A plot. You were worried about Joe upstaging you.
No, this is a bit.
So that's why you tried to get him out.
This is and one of those this is why obscure. You should be on time.
Now, this is one of those weird, obscure UCB bits. It's like a door gag. We just keep cycling dudes in and out. It's like, yes, and. RoboCop, one thing, I wanted to talk about RoboCop for 1 second.
Please. And Brett has a good point.
And Ed209 does the security at my building.
Really?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, you have 15 seconds to comply, but it never really shoots anybody because my landlord can't afford the bullets. But what was on, do you have a comment?
Oh, Brett said TV billboards and Blade Runner predicted today.
Well, you know, Blade Runner is really, for a movie that was done pre-CGI with just optical effects, the effects are pretty fucking awesome in Blade Runner. And I don't like Blade Runner, by the way. I'm a Philistine amongst all the nerds. I don't like Blade Runner.
Is it all the boring parts that you don't like?
I don't like the hero. I think the hero's a douchebag. I don't care if he's a replicant or not. I don't give a fuck. The bottom line is, I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. I know I got some highfalutin big city ways when I came out here in Los Angeles, but the Missouri in me tells me that your fucking hero, his first heroic act is not to shoot a woman robot in the fucking back. And that's the first thing Deckard does. He comes upon that chick. She runs away from him. He shoots her in the fucking back through a plate glass window.
Ed, to be fair, those replicants killed hundreds on the off-world colonies.
Yeah, we didn't get to see it because they didn't have the budget.
Oh,
fuck
so em. You're saying it would have had more emotional impact if we had seen their crimes?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if I agree with your story.
Yeah, I don't know why you're doing air quotes on the radio, but it doesn't fucking matter.
Hey,
that's true.
I didn't see the towers go down firsthand.
The fine point.
Well, but I'm sure replicants did it.
I saw them on TV.
Replicants didn't do it, but reptoids did. Reptoids
and if you
being
don't like Blade Runner,
shape-shifting alien creatures.
The replicants have already won.
Well, then they just won then. Screw them. No, that's
come on,
George
like
W.
That.
Bush doing Blade Runner ads over here. No, I just really don't like Blade Runner.
All right,
Runner.
Well, let me see if I can convince you.
Okay.
Do you like that scene where that lady tries to choke Deckard to death with her hoo-ha?
Not really.
No, really? That doesn't get you going?
No, I watch real porn, so I don't need to watch a Cinemax assassination.
Cinemax assassination.
How about that scene at the end where the villain could kill the hero but doesn't for some reason? The dada get you going?
Yeah, I never saw that before.
Yeah, I'm always confused in every single movie where the villain could just shoot the person and then, like, move on.
No, but I'm not even talking about
they're
the whole
Adam West
like
Batman fans.
I'm not even talking about the speech. It's like at the end, he's like, "I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to die. This means something." Goodbye, everybody.
Nobody knows what.
A lot of the time, I think I like Blade Runner, and then I realize I'm thinking about that Apple commercial.
Well, I just don't know who put in Rutger Hauer's gravitas chip. Or whatever, because he was really hamming it up in that scene. And you know they say that Rutger Hauer wrote that last monologue.
I've heard that, yeah.
So the fact that Rutger Hauer could envision a sci-fi monologue,
do you mean,
that's an acting motherfucker.
Do you mean the star of Hobo with a Shotgun?
Exactly.
Yes,
that's what I'm saying.
And The Hitcher.
And a bunch of other weird, weird fucking movies.
I just don't want any more versions of Blade Runner. There's too many director's cuts.
Okay, have you heard that there is officially 2015 going to be a reboot of the Fantastic Four? How do you guys feel about that?
Hooray.
Who's anybody have they cast?
No words yet. No words on that yet. Just that there's going to be a reboot.
Okay, the thing is a pile of CGI. The Invisible Woman is the hot bitch of the moment, whether or not she's right for the role.
Ooh,
Reed Richards
I like
will
her
be,
work.
Yeah, Reed Richards will be
hot.
Yeah, Reed Richards will be a goddamn Australian.
You asshole.
That's incredibly Raven. I'm sorry. Please continue. I'm so sorry.
But who do you guys think would be Johnny Storm this time since they made Johnny Storm into Captain America?
Who is 11 right now?
Yep.
That will be great in 5 years.
Who played Captain America in the TV movie in 1980?
He'd be great. He'd be great for the role.
Can we look that up, Ron? A guy. He's very, I think he's Gerald Ford's son. The guy who played Captain America in the 1980s.
Fingers crossed.
Wasn't there that Avengers like trailer where they put like Lou Ferrigno, Hulk, and stuff from that, and the Hammond Spider-Man from the TVs. No, it wasn't Spider-Man.
I met Lou Ferrigno at this.
How can you not? How can you avoid
it's harder
him?
To not. You're right. You have
everywhere.
To go out of your way to not meet Lou Ferrigno now. Any convention.
Yeah,
he's,
I remember,
he's the guy that gives you your badge.
Like 19. I think,
like, man,
Ferrigno,
you were really big for a nerd who works for the convention.
Him and Virgil.
He sells all these autograph pictures of himself, and he needs to branch out in his merchandising. I think he should sell a resin garage kit of himself in the pose of signing autographs at conventions.
I like that. You put it. You put a Gundam helmet on him.
I think it was Matt Salinger.
And his, let's see if Ed's right.
Oh, he was J.D. Salinger's kid or some shit like that.
J.D. Salinger's kid with Captain America?
I wish he had told J.D. Salinger and not have shown up. Oh! Who's drunk? Who's with me? Who drove here drunk?
That's why you couldn't find this giant scaffolding building.
This building is dark as the night. I'll tell you right now, I saw this building. It can't be this abandoned building.
Yeah, he's in Revenge of the Nerds and may be best known for a starring role in the 1990 film Captain America.
Yeah, it wasn't 80, it was 1990. That was the one that the trailer was going on forever with the shield and then it came towards you. They were showing that trailer for like 9 years before the movie came out.
Well, and the rumor is that they had a hard time doing another Captain America movie because they were having a hard time getting the rights from these people.
Oh,
from the Nazis.
Yeah, they're always against Captain America.
I'll tell you what I'd like. I'd like a dark and gritty Fantastic Four. I'd like
leather jackets.
Yeah, I want them to all be wearing leather jackets. I want all of them to speak like this.
And including Invisible Woman.
Yeah.
And she has to be raped at some point, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you think she could protect herself
by just being invisible?
Wait, that's it. It's a societal statement because victims of sexual assault are invisible to us.
Yeah.
One out of every four people. One out of every Fantastic Four.
And when her powers manifest, I want Reed Richards to be like, "Where is she?
Where's Susar?"
Isn't this a movie where like a ghost?
But then I want the thing to talk
this. Ghostbusters 1.
The thing.
Also, Jack Frost. I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
She
gets F'd by that snowman's carrot.
But it's snowman, you know.
Oh yeah, I remember
that. Happens.
No, there was some famous movie.
There was a ghost.
Ghostbusters 1. No, a ghost gives Dan Aykroyd a blowjob.
Well, no, it's called The Entity. Yeah. The movie you're thinking about, The Entity. They try to trap the rape ghost in ice, and he breaks. Out of the ice. I guess he fucks his way out of the ice. And he goes and attacks Barbara Hershey some more because she's so fucking hot, yo, that only even the undead want to rape her. So, yeah.
That's so, Eric Barnes said Gerard Butler is Mr. Fantastic, David Fincher's Fantastic Four, and Tom Kenny is the thing.
Tom Kenny
from SpongeBob SquarePants.
SpongeBob Rock Pants.
Hey, Gerard Butler's got a good thing going with the rom-com career right now.
Yeah, he does. I don't think he's going to do anything else besides
that. Yeah. Even when he wants to get out, the rom-com beast will just be like, "You will not move."
Yep.
And just pull him in.
What if Jason Statham plays everybody?
That'd be okay with me. Okay. At least there'd be good fight scenes.
I want him to play Valerie and Franklin too. Little baby versions of him. Like when the Wayans brothers were babies.
Oh, right. They just put CGI their head on.
And wasn't that the best movie that has ever been written?
That was Little Big Man.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I
met the writer of Little Big Man. He gave me love advice one night.
What was it?
He told me, I remember I was with this girl I was friend-zoned with.
Or Little Man. Mm-hmm. It's called Little Man.
Little Man, exactly. But he was like a Wayans brothers writer. And I burped and I went, "Excuse me." And then while she was turned away, he goes, "You don't say excuse me in front of bitches." Just fucking burp. And I was like, "You know,
like
what, you're
man.
Right. I'm being such a fucking pussy. Thanks, guy that wrote Little Man."
Now Asterios burps and blows it in chicks' faces when they're around.
And then they swoon.
Yeah.
It's that's like, oh my god.
They immediately start blowing you, right?
And then he pushes their face away by the forehead and is like, "Get out of my burp zone."
Awesome. Now you're in the zone. The burp zone.
You know what he does? He pops a DVD in the player and he goes, "Bitches, leave."
I got some Fantastic Four to watch.
Well, no, I thought, well, what was wrong with the first one? And let's be succinct, guys. What was really wrong that made it suck? Not all the stuff that was
Fantastic
wrong.
Four?
Yeah, the Fantastic Four movie that came out.
I didn't even watch it.
It was boring.
You mean the Roger Corman one?
No.
As I like to call it, the good one? No.
From 1994. Sue, your legs. They're gone.
I love. He was. The outfits that they wore, the costumes, were the John Byrne inverted color versions in the Roger Corman one, which I always thought was really cool.
Yeah.
The only thing really cool about the Roger Corman one,
the costumes.
Yeah.
That's sometimes true. That's how they get the shit right.
Also, the Thing's costume, I'm pretty sure, was one of the Ninja Turtle costumes spray painted orange. Had to be
drawn on with some bricks and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
It I believe it.
Yeah.
They couldn't, you know, fork out the money for, like, Ultraman monster production values.
No. That's actually why they had to change the turtle costumes in Secret of the Ooze, because someone had stolen one for the Fantastic Four movie.
And they wanted them all to match. They didn't want one that looked different.
Yeah, you can't have one that looks terrible.
So Secret of the Ooze really has two Leonardos.
Yep.
But, you know, that's why Leonardo and Raphael are never in the same scene.
You know what one of my friend posits? I draw Ninja Turtles all the time, and one of the things I don't like is when they draw Ninja Turtles with teeth and when they draw them with fingernails. And I was like, what the fuck, man? Turtles don't have either. They need to fucking quit it and redesign the turtles. One of my friends told me, well, they are mutant turtles. Well, mutated with what? And they said, well, they're born in the sewer. There's all sorts of human DNA in the sewer.
That's right.
So obviously they got some of those human traits of the teeth and the tongues and shit like that.
You can make that argument,
turtles
I guess.
Don't have.
Yeah. Splinter leaves that part out of the origin story, that their nest was made out of a lot of used semen-covered tissues.
Your mother was a pile of semen tissues. Your father, a pile of shit. Your other father, me. Your other father, mutagen.
Enjoy.
Fingernail clippings can be in the sewer as well.
Right,
also,
exactly.
No opposable thumbs, I believe, on the turtles last I checked. On turtles.
Yeah, see? All that right. Human, that shitty DNA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel's just sitting there listening to the origin story. He's like, I think I'm just going to stay with the Foot Clan. Guys seem fine. What's that guy doing now? The guy that played Daniel, April O'Neil's boss's son, in the first Ninja Turtles movie.
You're going to need IMDb for that.
I'll be right back.
Stat.
You're doing it?
I'm doing it. I got it.
I was a kid. And I got one of those original old black and white Ninja Turtles comics, like a reprint. And I remember seeing, like, Raphael. There were, like, two Foot Clan guards on the subway platform. And he was like, these Psy should do the trick. And he took his Psy, and he threw them, and they hit both of the Foot Clan members in the neck. And then they came out the other side. And Raphael was like, bullseye. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, those comics were not for kids.
No, they absolutely weren't.
Hell no. Not even close.
I mean, so used to, like, Bebop and Rocksteady antics.
But it's just like Bob Saget. You know that people saw Bob Saget do stand-up, and he talked about the filthiest shit on the planet, and then they were like, this guy needs a family TV show. Because that's what he looked like. He looked like a family dude. And turtles doing ninja shit sounds great for kids.
I know. Kids still love it today.
Yeah. I mean,
I read that Ninja Turtles script, the one that was supposed to be done by what's his name?
Michael Bay.
By Michael Bay. And it's not terrible. It's fine. But, like, it inspired so much nerd rage.
Oh, yeah.
That I became a fan of it in counter-protest.
Almost like nerding, over-nerding them by being counterculture.
Over-nerding them. Direct all of your nerd energies towards him. We will over-nerd him. He will explode.
If you wear like a pro Michael Bay t-shirt to Comic-Con, and then I'll be impressed.
Oh my God, that would be hilarious.
I'll tell you guys.
People would freak the fuck out.
Yeah, that's like wearing a Django Unchained t-shirt to a Klan rally.
BotCon, the Transformers convention, is in San Diego this year.
Oh, cool.
And I want to go just purely as a Michael Bay Transformers fan. Just like t-shirt, hat. I just want to talk to people all the time about the Michael Bay Transformers movies and be like, oh, look at these non-movie toys.
Yeah. And be like how it really caught steam when Michael Bay took over. I mean, the other stuff is okay, but Michael Bay really redefined the vision and stuff like that.
You know what's my favorite quote for when they see a robot that looks too CG? They say, oh, it looks so Bayformers.
Oh, I've heard that.
Yep.
Bayformers.
Wow. Oh, wow.
By the way, the The tale of the kid that played Danny in the Ninja Turtles movie is not an exciting one.
The tale.
Okay.
He bought a car dealership.
His name is Michael Turney. He was in a movie called Spike of Bensonhurst in 1988.
I'm sure that was
Bensonhurst.
His star-making turn question mark role in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, followed by a small role in a movie called Cost of Living in 1997. I have more IMDb credits than Daniel Pennington from the Ninja Turtles movie.
Nice. Well done. All
right. That's great.
I feel pretty fucking good right now.
But were you in the Ninja Turtles
movie?
Were you
in that movie?
Well, then shut the fuck up.
I don't see what you're bragging about.
I played Kino.
Oh, okay.
In the second Ninja Turtles movie.
I played one of...
Eggs on my face.
I suppose.
Eggs on my face. I played one of Vanilla Ice's background ninja dancers.
Hell yeah.
For the ninja rap?
Did you really?
Yeah.
That's
I was like, go ninja, go ninja, go.
The impressive thing about the ninja rap sequence.
He actually came up with go ninja, go ninja, go.
That's actually based on another David Bowie song, so. You know.
The artistic energy in the room during the go ninja sequence is astounding.
It is.
Because something happens in front of Vanilla Ice that is so moving. An entire song comes to him fully formed.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And his dancers are just like... It's like when Anthony Kiedis talks about how they wrote Under the Bridge and he just wrote that poem and all the other guys just join in, you know? Like, Vanilla Ice was just like, just lay down a beat. And he just went for it. And his dancers were like, we got to follow this guy. You know, this. I don't know what this is, but it's beautiful.
Sometimes I feel like I don't have a ninja. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
So let's try and do... BotCon. Let's try and get comics and comics to go to BotCon. Right.
Oh, also, what about WonderCon?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, obviously.
We should submit to that.
That's in Anaheim.
By we mean Tom. Tom, you should submit to that and then invite us.
Or Joe Starr, who's actually pretty organized.
And everyone comes up with ideas for work that they want me to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's about the best.
You know, and especially because you're the one with the most responsibilities already.
That would be your superpower amongst us.
You put them all on you.
I'm the Ruben Kincaid of comics and comics.
Nice.
I want to say this to just jump back to Ninja Turtles years ago. I mean, to jump back to Transformers years ago. Tom and
I were
on
only an hour show.
Well, can we get some more time in here? I'm about to talk about Transformers. Thanks. Put some more energy on.
I don't know.
Can we spare some time between 5-minute lengthy silences to do this?
Yeah, totally.
Tom and I were on a podcast with the guy that wrote the Transformers movie, the Transformers, the movie from the 80s.
I mean,
he was a producer.
Dude, I remember that. Go. This is great.
And I was on the panel with him, and I was like, why did you kill all the Transformers in the first 10 minutes of that animated movie? I was like, didn't you know that kids were going to be traumatized by this? I was like, you killed them. You killed all of them. And you killed every single one. And then you killed Optimus Prime.
They killed them good, too.
Yes!
There's a horrible scene where RC is just lying, standing on top of just their wrecked bodies. And everyone's like, we don't have time to mourn.
Were you guys traumatized by this?
Yeah, a little bit. I remember watching going, what the fuck?
I watched it yesterday.
When I was a kid, the worst things that happened to me as a kid, my dad leaving me,
that sucks.
Hulk Hogan losing WrestleMania, and Optimus Prime getting gunned down. Straight up in that order, like a motherfucker.
Yeah, seriously. So, I mean, it was horrifying for everybody. I mean, like,
I lived in a bush for like a week. I think that was my worst time.
Nah, my Optimus Prime thing's worse.
Okay. Whoa there, humble brag. Can we get back to the story?
We can talk about your bush adventures later.
Jesus.
But what? Did you have any Transformers?
There were Transformers in the bush. That was okay.
So I'm like, hey, why did you do this? And the guy goes, you know, we were just given word. We were just told, like, you got to kill off the 86 line. We got to introduce all these new toys.
For the 87 one.
For the 87 line. Kill off all these characters. And I was like, well, didn't you consider, like, putting them in a pocket universe or, like, saying, like, we have to go back to fight for Cybertron. Here are your new friends. I was like, did you consider doing anything? And he was like, no. We were just told to kill them. And then we didn't realize it was such a big deal until we found out that there was a kid. Hasbro called us up and was like, there's a kid who has not come out of his room for 2 weeks because Optimus Prime is dead. You've got to bring back Optimus Prime right now. And that's why they did that thing where those ghosts of robots brought Optimus Prime back. You know this.
Yep.
How does that go?
Step in.
Well, they brought him back. The first time they like fake brought him back.
Okay.
Where like literally his...
Wasn't he like
his,
a clone or some weird...
No, it's like his zombie was literally like walking around.
Yeah.
And then they brought him back for the return of Optimus Prime, which was horribly stupid. It should have had really high hope, but it was like, oh man, there's all these characters coming back and it's great. But the enemy was these hate spores that just turned everyone red. So basically everyone, the team was like, all right, guys, we got to bring Optimus Prime back for these episodes. But this is a holiday weekend. So just figure out a reason why we don't have to color everyone. So then they brought back Optimus Prime. So they did the return of Optimus Prime, and then they did this thing called Rebirth that was like three episodes that justified those Headmaster toys. Remember the ones that their heads turned into robots?
Do we remember the Headmaster toys? Did you actually just ask?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, some other people listening might not remember that, and then they were asked.
And then, turn off your computers, then.
And then the company that did the Japanese cartoon was like, whoa. What are you guys, like, you guys need to commit to your shit. And so the Japanese company just, like, completely ignored their Headmaster stuff and was like, yeah, Optimus Prime can come. And then Optimus Prime leaves immediately in the Japanese cartoon. Like, Prime is literally like, no, it should still be Rodimus, and just ups and leaves.
Was Rodimus that good? Was he better than Optimus?
He wasn't as good, but he was a little more interesting. He did have a dumb name.
Yep.
But he was a little more interesting.
I just said stupider.
It's pretty unbelievable. No, you're better than me. That whole, it reminded me of that thing you do. You know when Tom Hanks comes in to like manage the band, like their existing manager, the band's really taking off, and the first manager says, you know what? I've taken you as far as I can go. It's time for Tom Hanks' character to really bring you to the big leagues. As all showbiz managers do.
Oh, yeah.
When the big money is about to kick in. So that's about as realistic as Optimus Prime leaving. But it brings up a point of, you know, you were shocked to learn how this dramatic plot line took place of all these Transformers dying. And, you know, it's really a beloved movie. You know, for nerds, everyone, oh my God, it's so great. And it took all these risks. And yet it was done for completely like commercial reasons.
Mercenary purposes. Oh, right. Yeah.
And they needed to make more money.
It's just important to realize that, you know, good art can come from bad motivations and reasons. It's just like you look at Image in the 90s, where it's just like, oh, creator control and Marvel and DC and all, let's get away from the clutches and let's do the stories that we really care about. And plenty of, oftentimes when you're coming from a place of passion rather than, you know, rules being imposed on you from corporate knuckleheads, you can come up with really awful art, you know?
Jesus, yeah.
Like if you ever sat on any film festival jury to decide what's going to be in the festival and what's not going to be in the festival, I assure you that every single, like, story that's really the director's real life, and you know, and the film is just a disguise for that. I'm sure that came from a complete place of passion and heart, and you know, all of these self-help gurus, and they're just unwatchable.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, I think a lot of those guys were like, "I want to do a Wolverine story. They won't let me do it, so I'm gonna draw a Wolverine story, but call him Claw."
Yep.
Yep. Yeah.
I tried to go back and look at a bunch of like old Wildstorm stuff and like the old, it's unreadable, a lot of it. It's just horrendous. It's all so bad.
And so much of Wildcats barely got interesting when Alan Moore was writing. When Alan Moore went slumming that like two summers.
Oh, yeah.
He just started writing like Wildcats and he just fucking said, okay, screw all these Wildcats. It was like he Optimus Primed them. He just said, all right, forget it. I'm not going to write about any of these characters. These characters all suck.
So we're going to bring on
Grifter's brother, Void's sister, and all these different. But the thing is, those people didn't have art in their souls. I don't want to diss Jim Lee and Mark Silvestri and all those people, but you see, as soon as they possibly could sell out again and go back to working for the man, they did.
Yep.
Every single freaking one of them, except maybe Larson.
That's because you gotta make some fucking money sometimes.
But they were making money shitbag over shitbag.
Well, I was listening to a podcast
bad art
with two famous people.
And they had a pretty good idea, I think, that if they made enough noise, they could make some. You know, I mean,
they could go back and have
Image
a little...
itself was a publicity stunt.
Well, it's kind of like when you're a comic. Yeah. And nobody really knows you, and you just do whatever gigs you can do, but then all of a sudden you got some heat under you and places that didn't want you to play, you just show up and go do comedy there because you can now.
Yeah. For an hour and a half.
Well, if that's what you want to do, I wouldn't do that, but I might go do 15 or 20.
90 minutes of Rob Liefeld not drawing feet.
Exactly.
Live on stage.
And then a whole hour of Jim Lee's butts. That guy draws butts.
He does.
Better than butts look in real life.
He does. Yeah. I agree.
I'll tell you, if you gave me a photo of a hot girl's butt and then a Jim Lee drawn butt, I'll take the drawing every time. These are some great butts.
He does. Jim Lee's a master of butts.
And that's end quote, every fanboy.
Also, if you know who draws the best guns that look like envelopes?
Rob Liefeld.
Boy, those are some envelope-ass guns.
I have two theories on Rob Liefeld. Can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so the first theory is that he does draw feet, but then he clips them off of the drawing and keeps all of those clippings in a tub that he rolls around and jerks off in.
It could be.
Okay. That's theory number one.
He's like Quentin Tarantino.
It could be a tub of the pictures and actual real people's feet.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah.
Theory number two, he's trying to warn us about like a Lovecraftian foot-stealing god that takes the shape of a solid color blank background. And he's trying to warn us through his comics that it's coming for us.
Your hate for Rob Liefeld is like, I've never met anyone who's like, yeah, I like that guy. Not one time.
I think that's just kind of like a nerd meme at this point. Yeah, we're all kind of like, we need to hate him to be real nerds.
Editors still say that he sells books. I mean, he does, that's what I'm saying.
He does have good storytelling in his, you know, panel construction, you know, and that's what's always made him.
Look at you, panel construction.
Yeah, I don't even know about that.
Sorry, I care about comic books.
It was cute.
But no, I don't know, though. I look at some of those New Mutants and X-Force issues, and the panel construction is just as bad as everybody else's, and the anatomy is awful, and the pacing is terrible, and the backgrounds are awful. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, he's got a dynamism. I'll agree with that. He has a dynamism to the average drawing that your average fan person can't match. I don't care if you can draw better than him. You won't have the dynamism in the staging. I'll agree with that. But as far as his panel-to-panel storytelling being so superior to most people, I don't think
Isn't there an issue of X-Force that is just 24 pages to describe one gun? And, like, you just keep turning, like, this gun gets bigger and then, like, spreads out. And then even the gun has pouches, if I'm not much mistaken.
All right, we got a Deadpool, Rob Liefeld.
The trigger looks like an envelope.
Yeah.
All right, so he's even got feet, but he's got a huge dick.
If Liefeld's played out.
Deadpool's got a gargantuan dick.
You should let everybody see this Deadpool wiener.
Oh, God. Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He's got abs on his head.
But he's got a huge dick.
And from here, it also just looks like the cover to a Youngblood comic.
Have you seen the Jeff Darrow Deadpool covers? The alternate ones? Beautiful.
Have you guys seen the Clarence Darrow Deadpool covers? Pretty great reference, huh?
Have you seen the Mia Farrow covers from King Kong?
Oh, if only I remembered what Clarence Darrow did. Something with science.
Let's move on. A Liefeld tribute that someone drew.
Oh, God. This is going to be beautiful.
This is how he draws them. If you guys can't see him, it's hilarious. Yeah.
You guys are busting at me for making air quotes. Holding up JPEGs.
What we're going to do is...
No, this is the worst podcast ever.
You're going to put
ever.
Both of those on our page for our fans. Right? Oh, then, you can put web links to them and put them on the forum so that people can see it.
Then if you wouldn't mind, grab a quick picture of me doing this.
Yeah. A really funny internet writer named Brandon Stroud, look him up, does these, like, I think he has two of them, but they're these, like, top 100 worst Rob Liefeld drawings.
Oh,
and
my
he just
God.
Gives them this amazing commentary.
Yeah, I think I've seen one of those.
Seek them out. They're brilliant.
Yeah, I think I've seen one of those.
Really funny stuff.
I had a friend who hated him, and I signed him up for his fan club.
Excellent.
So he would get the newsletter every month.
Well, you know what Rob Liefeld's unrequited wish is? He wants to do a Rob Liefeld version of the entire Bible as a big comic book.
Well, Simon Bisley's doing the Bible. He's been doing it for a long time.
Well, yep. Well, Rob Liefeld wants to do a way better version than Simon Bisley's going
to
do.
Well, who has the rights to the Bible right now? Is that
Disney?
Is it still Disney?
Barack.
But I hear that if they don't make a Bible movie in the next 5 years, then it reverts back to God.
No, Avi Arad gets it.
Oh, he's in line. Damn it.
Well, one thing I wanted to talk about on this particular podcast was what are your guys' feelings about so-called nerd comedy and all that jazz? Because we never really got to talk about it. That's why we just had when we just had Tom on it. And we've talked about it at length. So we can kind of shorten that up for the last 14 minutes.
Well, I mean, if you don't mind.
Talk about.
I actually have a guest with me.
Okay.
He asked for a minute of this podcast to do a little bit of his nerdy, geeky, dorky stand-up.
Okay.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to bring out the nerdy, dorky, geeky stand-up of Calvin Fitzsimmons. Blah. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. Jar Jar Binks.
That's hilarious.
Blah. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. A bad Tim Burton movie. Thank you, Calvin. Thanks for coming on.
He's good.
Job. That guy's a genius.
He's really good. A hipster.
Trailblazer.
Hipster.
What were we talking about?
Geek comedy.
Yeah, we were talking about geek comedy, and he did a hilarious, our guest did a hilarious dissertation on the sort of inside nature of certain geek humor. I find myself to be, I hate when people are surprised that I do so well at clubs, and I hate that when people are
who
surprised.
Who tells you that?
But no, a lot of people, they go like, well, yeah, you got a nice little niche there, your little niche market of doing that nerd stuff. I'm just like, I was on stage at the Improv for 300 people, and I smashed with a joke about Batman. Fuck your mom, okay? There is no niche.
Maybe
the niche
they don't
is a
like
Grand
you because of that mom part.
Yeah. I'm just saying the niche is a fucking Grand Canyon. There is no niche.
I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
Admittedly, my jokes are a little more, I mean, I guess they're a little more mainstream because I talk about Spider-Man and fucking Batman and Lord of the Rings, and everybody's seen those movies. But at the same time, not everybody's read the books or read the comics.
So wait, what's our issue? What are we talking about? I have no idea what we're talking about. What is the issue?
We were just talking about geek comedy in general and whether it actually exists, and
it exists in this room. It exists when we do comics and comic shows. I know that. You know, as I said, I've been doing the show for 5 years, and everyone was asking me to do the show. And that's when I started doing the Crisis on Infinite Comics and Comics, which is how I found Asterios. But, you know, I was just seeing all of these comedians, and most of them did not have actual geek sensibilities in their material.
And that reminds me, at a couple of shows I've done, because the nerd thing's gotten very popular, there's been a slew of shows that are like, nerd-centric shows. And I did a show, and it was like, the nerds of comedy or something along those lines, you know. And on the show were no nerd comics. They were all people who literally made fun of nerds, and it was during a Comic-Con situation. So the crowd was actually, there were people dressed up in Star Trek uniforms, and you could see them all being like, what? I thought
Sad
you were going to
be just stunned.
Yeah, seriously. They're like, we're being made fun of here. And then one guy did a joke about, he did like this like great rap about Cloud City Bitch. I don't know if you've heard that song.
Yeah.
But he did Cloud City instead. It was fucking hilarious. And then they loosened up a little bit. And then when I went up and actually did like, I like nerd stuff jokes, they, you know, really enjoyed it. And that's the thing is like people act like nerds aren't a viable.
There's plenty of crowds that you're going to have jokes in your act that are not going to be appropriate for them. They're going to be too geeky.
Yeah.
But the problem that you're describing, and we're all smart enough to know that, to like back off.
To adjust.
And there's plenty of jokes that I have where the joke is that I assume that everyone is as equally nerdy as I am. And you don't have to have, you know, seen Star Wars 50 times in order to get that. But there definitely is this spike of geek comedy that is not really geeky.
Well, so, you know, it's...
Ooh, that's interesting. Brett says many nerd comics are actually self-hating nerds.
Well, many comics are self-hating.
Well, I guess that's true.
Like, you know, none of those like, they're like, I'm doing great. Everything's great.
Yeah. Otherwise, we wouldn't
glass
be.
Glass half full.
Tom and I had a really weird drive here because I choked myself the entire trip. I literally was choking myself.
You were pulling a carotid in the back of Tom's car?
Both of them, yeah.
Well, you know what would make that even nerdier? If you were force choking yourself.
Oh! That joke had a high Metachlorian count.
Well, and that's when that joke was ruined.
Well, and let me say,
that joke has just been mysterious.
You said it was a mysterious process of how funny the joke was, and then you just put a scientific process on it and fucked it all up,
ruined
Joe.
Ruined the whole thing.
Thanks, Joe.
Since we're all
comedians and we're all, you know, geeks as well, I was talking to Joe about this in the ride here, about the Killing Joke, the comic book from the 80s, you know, Alan Moore, Brian Boland, and the Joker's origin. What's so funny?
No, Asterios almost flipped the table over like the money lenders in the Bible.
In that comic book, we find out about the origin of the Joker, and we find out that he was a comedian, which you didn't know before. You knew he joined the Red Hood gang, and then he got the acid spilled on him. Mm-hmm. And it starts off where he's got this pregnant wife, and he's auditioning for some unknown comedy job. And she comes back, and she says, "How did it go?" He says, "Well, I messed up a couple of the jokes, and they said they'd call me." And she's going, "Oh." And at that point, we know nothing about the Joker as a comedian in what he's really like. Is like, is he really no good and like struggling in this career that he's not skilled enough in? Or having a pregnant wife and all these pressures of life, is that getting to him? Or is it some dumb showbiz thing where they really gave the gig to someone's family member or something like that? And then at the end of the Killing Joke, Batman gets the Joker, brings him to justice, and they're waiting for the cops to show up. And the Joker launches into, he says, "This whole thing reminds me of a joke." And he starts to tell this joke, and he's telling this joke not to distract Batman so he can escape. Mm. He's telling the joke to tell the joke. And through the amazing artwork, you can tell that he is telling this joke brilliantly. So he finishes the joke, he gets to the punchline, and he starts cracking himself up, and he apologizes to Batman. And then Batman starts chuckling at it. And they start cracking up together as the cops come to take, you know, the Joker away to Arkham. And I just remember that came out when I started doing comedy, and it had such a big impact on me because it makes the Joker's origin that much more tragic, because you realize at that point, oh my God, he did have it. He did have these skills to be a great comedian in him all along, and that he took this path to become the super criminal is all that much more tragic. And, you know, that's why I keep doing comedy. That's why I keep doing comics and comics, so I can avoid becoming the Joker.
Brilliant. Fair enough.
You know, it's funny because they're laughing about it. I remember that. That is a really haunting sequence at the end of that.
That is a huge victory for the Joker.
I know.
Not as a supervillain, as a comedian.
You're making Batman laugh? Are you fucking kidding me?
It's just like, we all love Batman. I don't want him in my fucking crowd, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, the second I make an innocent person dying joke, he's just going to lose his shit.
Yeah. Well, my Batman, like, oh, too far.
It kind of is.
It's like, you ever seen bloody pearls on the ground? Anybody?
Anybody?
Punch.
But I mean, I think the interesting thing is it's like he makes Batman laugh like 6 minutes after shooting Batman's friend in the spine.
Yeah. That's how you know he's a good comic. We were talking about Rough Rooms.
That's the toughest comic. Exactly.
That's tougher than following Dane Cook.
In the belly room.
After 2 hours.
The belly in the belly room, yeah.
So, yeah. And we just did Hypno Comics recently. And it was amazing. I mean, the room is always packed with people who are... The thing is, there are people who are there not only to laugh, like they're just there to have a good time on top of like really enjoying that they get to hear references to stuff that they feel like only this group of people really like.
Well, that has really turned into a win-win situation, because I believe it has helped all of us when we're doing shows at conventions that we're trying to get ready for, to do the Hypno show, drive out to Ventura beforehand, and really just sort of fine tune it up. You know, and he knows that we're doing that. You know, it's not like we're pulling the wool over his eyes or, George Chase.
He knows now. We talked about it on the radio. Well,
think, and that's you're talking about like all the geek comedy shows and stuff. And I really think the audience makes them more than the comic. Because there's been a lot of times where I go to these so-called like geek comedy shows and like, you know, I'll drop references and people are just like, what? What is that? And it's like, you came to this.
Yeah.
I watched the Avengers movie. I'm a nerd. Make me laugh.
Yeah.
Which that's,
that girl sounds hot, though. Which that's,
you know, I'm glad that that hot girl liked the Avengers movie. But, like, I like that, you know, like, a geek show is, like, a really good geek show when, like, the audience is geeky and, like, with you. And,
like when you talk about Dragon Ball Z and they're like, oh, yeah, I get it. Or Pokemon.
Yeah, I'm
or,
here. Yeah.
You know.
I've got that.
A specific thing like in Transformers.
Up, it's not like you showed up with a deck of Magic the Gathering cards and they're like, we don't know what this tournament's for.
Yeah. I thought we were going
to
play poker.
We had to start the show. We had to drag people from the parking lot because they were playing games before the show.
Yeah, that's on the hood of car.
Somebody asked us a question, guys. It's kind of odd. John Anthony Maida here said, hey guys, I'm a fan of the station and of me. That's nice. And I was wondering if you can care to explain the difference of a hobbit and a dwarf, because clearly some of my friends don't have a clue and I don't know how to explain it.
There's a great scene from the BBC Office where they do that.
Okay.
But now let's do it.
So ourselves. Look for that scene. Yeah, next question, please.
Do you have
one? Oh, boy.
It's pretty simple. There are two different races.
Well, aren't they
beings.
Sub? But they're sub. They're cousin races, though. Aren't they?
Well, here's the thing. Here's the easiest
that I know
way.
Of.
Here's the easiest way. Dwarves have beards. Hobbits breathe with their own tears. They cry so fucking much in these fucking movies.
They also have hairy feet.
Yeah, I'm just imagining, like, listeners, like a really politically correct listener in Middle Earth, like being pissed at your answer on that.
How can it be so insensitive?
No, hobbits have beards on their feet, and they're slightly more pussy than regular dwarves.
If it hasn't
dwarves
cried for 3 minutes, it's a dwarf.
Oh, right, Brett, right. You are so wrong. Brett says a real geek show would be an audience of all dudes, unfortunately, and that is not correct. Every show we've done at a comic book shop has had quite a few girls. Now, admittedly, they were girlfriends of somebody who was there and were nerds too, but still girls there.
And admittedly, those girls were rolling their eyes, but still, they went, no, that's not true. Look, there's plenty of real fan geeks. I know is a woman. I know very few male Doctor Who fans. I'm sorry, Tom. Please.
There's plenty of real geeks. There's plenty of fake geeks. But I don't think it's across gender lines at all.
Yeah
I don't think so either. And we got like 2 minutes left.
Boy club to try to maintain. Yeah. Stay out of our boys' club of loneliness.
Who's going
to
clean up all the pizza boxes from our parties? We need girls.
So we got 2 minutes left, basically. So do we have any shows, any things coming up?
We're at the Westside Comedy Theater on January 19th.
January 19th.
A Saturday. We're going to promote that, and we're doing the show in San Diego.
In San Diego, we're at the Madhouse Comedy Club January 17th.
Baller.
So everyone in this room, we need to all promote our asses off for January 19th. Because that's in town.
I can do that.
I can do it.
Let's get nuts.
Yeah. I have a lot of shows coming up. I mean, it's the holidays, so. But if you want to know more about me, you can follow me on Twitter at Asterios. Or you can go to, you can just Google Asterios Kokonos.
He's Googleable.
I'm Googleable. You know, it's spelled just like it sounds. But you follow me on Twitter and on Facebook. Just look for Asterios. My shows are all there.
I'm at Joestar187, Joestar187. And my talk show, the Joestar Show, starring Joestar, will be at the Nerdist this February. And you should look for it.
Definitely look for that. It's going to be awesome. And I am Bronswell, January 6th. I have a show at Flappers where Eddie Pepitone's headlining. It's going to be awesome.
I'm going to be on that show.
And Ed Greer is going to be on the show. I haven't booked at all, so guys who might want to do
ass?
The show. No, don't kiss my ass at all. You're going to be on the show if you want to be on it.
Seriously?
And then listen to my podcast, Angry Dorks, every Monday, 6 to 7
that
p.m.
That would be this. Seriously, are you doing any shows in New York?
Not yet. I haven't reached out yet. I'm just so fried. I just want to relax. But
At Ed Greer Destroys on Twitter, although I don't really tweet unless it's a basketball game, which nobody here would be interested in. And I'm at Flappers on Tuesday at like 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Before, comicsandcomics.net.
Comicsandcomics.net. It's awesome.
Before we go, I have a Troivia question for you guys. Troivia question.
I was noticing your shirt.
Who is Counselor Troy's Imzadi?
Oh, shit. Oh,
fuck.
Riker. It's Riker.
Is it Commander Riker?
Sorry, it's Worf. This question takes place during season 7.
You're a dick.
Izzy. No, there was a...
That's it. We're done.
Extreme rise. Yoda, why you being a player hater? You love it as-